You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein and Tim Lesmeister are here to kick off this week's broadcast. Thanks so much for joining us. We will have Aaron Hawes from the Minnesota DNR a little bit later to talk about the public comment period on Leech Lake. There's a new management plan on that important water body. Third largest lake entirely within Minnesota. Pretty important fishing lake. We'll talk to her. Stan Tequila will be with us. We haven't talked Nature Notes with Stan in many, many moons, so time to check in with him. He'll probably be with us for the next couple weeks. But Tim Lesmeister's here to help me kick off the show. There's a lot to talk about. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. And I just got back from a place you spend a fair amount of time, Alaska.
I do spend a fair amount of time in Alaska. And I've always loved the state of Alaska just because it's so wild. So much fun to go there and kayak in mountain lakes and fish for rainbow trout, all the different species that you find up there, cold water species. I do the rivers up there. My son's been a guide up there. And I love the state, but, you know, it's big and there's not a lot of roads. And getting around up there can be real tricky. Sometimes people that don't understand that get real frustrated because they get stuck somewhere or find that their, you know, flights get all topsy-turvy. But if you go up to Alaska and you're real open-minded about just going with the flow, then things are going to go well and you're going to see some of the most beautiful country in the world.
I was up there learning about the Ambler Road project, the Ambler Road boondoggle that would kind of parallel the Brooks Range. It would go due west off the Dalton Highway, just south of the quote-unquote community, more like the truck stop of Coldfoot, north of Fairbanks, several hours. Terrible idea. We flew over the area. It's an absolute wilderness filled with moose, grizzly bears, and lots and lots and lots of water. A lot of pier waters, native fisheries that would all be destroyed by this Ambler Road, which they want to build so that they can access some mines. We're going to talk about this a lot more. I don't want to get deep into it today, Tim, but if I had any doubts about a project like that, seeing what they want to do firsthand, I definitely locked it in with me that it's a terrible idea. We talked to some tribal folks up there. I talked to some resort owners up there who don't like the idea. And of course, the fishing that we had was phenomenal, Tim. And there's no doubt in my mind that building this road would destroy some of the fishing that we saw. I don't know if you're following the project much, Tim, if you want to make a quick comment.
Yeah, I am. And it doesn't surprise me these days that those projects are getting more and more attention in Alaska. It used to be Alaska was just such a faraway place that whenever somebody wanted to go in there and build a road or get access to a mine, no one even ever heard about it. Some people would try and get some media attention and try to get the word out, but it was rare that they ever went very far. These days, it's much better that we have the communications networks that we have, that we can find out about these, as you call it, a boondoggle, that actually make no sense. We don't need to get to this mining region because, you know, we've got access to a lot of other areas where mining would be a lot more easier. We'd probably gain more from being in other places. But, you know, somebody gets their idea that I got to go mine this spot. I need a road. And now we can hear about it sooner. We can fight it longer and we can go after something like this. And again, I think it's like you said, it's a boondoggle. We need to do everything we can to make sure it doesn't happen.
There's absolutely no public return on investment on this thing, but they have a friendly administration with the Trump administration that never saw a development project it didn't like. And so they've got a lot of tailwinds behind them pushing this thing forward. Like I say, we'll talk about it more, but it's like 250 bridges they want to build, Tim, like 2,500 culvert systems, you know, through this area. It's all water. 150 million tons of gravel to build. It's just a brutally bad idea. Like I say, what I want to talk about, though, Tim, was the fishing. We were flown in. It took four planes from Minneapolis to where I finally ended up, including a bush plane, about a 100-mile ride on a bush plane into a lake within gates of the Arctic National Park where we were fishing. We were at the south end of this lake, Tim, near the outlet, which was nice because we were able to walk to the outlet, and that was a logical place to do some shore fishing and wading fishing. I had a fly rod that I borrowed from you. I had a set of waders. Really glad I brought my waders. And we were fishing and got into Arctic grayling, a bunch of them. I bet I caught 40 or 50 Arctic grayling, Tim. Great fun catching and releasing these little guys. Some of them were not small, 2-3 pounds, put up a heck of a fight. They're beautiful fish. It was all, you know, ultra clear, unspoiled water up there. So these fish were just beautiful. But there was another wrinkle with this fishing, Tim, that was amazing. This outlet couldn't have been more than 6-7 feet deep at the deepest part. We're talking running water here, right? It's an outlet. And we got some rain one night, so the water came up. It was running pretty good by the time we left. And a couple guys, including me, we caught some big fish. We caught lake trout. At first, you know, one of the guys was like, it's a char, it's an Arctic char. And I walked up and I looked at it, I said, guys, that's a lake trout. You're looking at a Minnesotan where we catch a lot of lake trout in our border country, and I know lake trout. And I, no, it's too shallow. The lake trout should all be deep. And I'm like, and I started to kind of doubt myself. It's like, well, they're both char, maybe, but it sure looks like a lake trout to me. And then finally we had like a camp guide. He's like, that's a lake trout. And so we realized, yeah, we were catching lake trout, but Tim, I have never caught lakers in that kind of environment before. Shallow, fast moving water. And the only thing I can think of, well, the guide was like, well, I think they're in there spawning. And we did kill and eat one, and it had a little egg sac that looked quite undeveloped to my eye. I don't think they were spawning. It was the first week of August. I think even in Alaska, they're not in there spawning till late August or early September. I think they were in there trying to eat some of these small grayling.
I agree. Lake trout are opportunistic like any other fish. They go to where the forage is. And where you were at, there was forage. The water temperature was right. And you got lucky and you got into some nice big fish. And I'll tell you what, you catch a shallow lake trout, especially with a little current going. I mean, you've got to fight. That must have been just way too much fun.
Yeah, it was great fun. I had the fly rod, was a 6-weight rod, I think I had. Yeah, and then a spinning rod. I caught a laker on both, on the spinning setup as well as the fly setup. And yeah, they put up a great fight. I just kind of pulled them up on shore because both lakers I caught were early in the morning by myself. I'm an early riser, Tim, so I was smart. I got out there sometimes where the other guys did and tapped that water early. Although the grayling were not real active early in the morning, which I think is kind of a go figure. There's not a lot hatching early in the morning. It seemed like we had more luck with the grayling midday and into the afternoon, even in the evening when you had a lot of bugs hatching and you could see those grayling coming up to the top and, you know, grabbing bugs off the surface. I tried a mix of different things. I tried top water. It seemed like dry flies. We did pretty well with grayling. Woolly buggers. I caught grayling on woolly buggers, and I caught one of my lake trout on a woolly bugger.
Isn't that funny how certain lures work better than others? And you think that these fish, having probably never seen a lure before, would just eat anything that looked edible, but they don't. They have preferences, and I've always found that interesting. See, I think it's great that you were able to get into some multi-species because you kind of get a feel for the grayling when you hook into one of those. That they run, and they kind of zig and they zag, and sometimes they'll even jump. And the lake trout, they just want to dig and just shake head, and they're bulldogs. And it's kind of fun because you kind of feel the difference and you go, oh, hey, this one's a trout, this one's a grayling. And it's that to me is fun when you get into many species.
I had one grayling, Tim, that I reeled up, and this is kind of how I kind of determined that the lakers were probably pounding on the grayling. this lake trout followed up, and it was just hitting this little grayling repeatedly, just pounding on the little guy. And I mean, at one point, I had this grayling on the line 4, 5, 6 feet in front of me, and this lake trout is right there, just repeatedly. This went on for 90 seconds or more. And I swear the laker was looking at me like, what is that big thing in the water? I don't care. I want to try to get this grayling. And it was early in the morning. No one was there. I'm like, no one's here to see this or take a picture of this. This is incredible. You know, that's Alaska, I guess, right? It delivers those kind of remarkable situations. Land Tawney, of course, from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and now he's with American Hunters and Anglers. He was on the trip. Big time Western fly fisherman, really knows his stuff when it comes to fishing brown trout and rainbows and cutthroats out west. He'd never caught a grayling before. And I caught some at first, and I said, you know, I told him, you Western guys, him and Travis Hall from Outdoor Life were there. I said, you guys are going to, once you figure this out, you're going to be catching fish right and left, because they were really good fly casters. And I was right. They caught even more than I did. But it was great fun. And those grayling are they're great little fighters, pound for pound. They fought harder than the Lakers, I think.
Oh, yeah. The grayling are way fun to catch on light tackle. And that's what you do when you're up in Alaska. You know, if I'm fishing for king salmons, I'm going to use heavier gear. And as I get into the lakes and I'm fishing rainbows, smaller rainbows, I'm using ultralight tackle by then. So when you get into those lakes like you were in, where the, you know, main source of pleasure is the grayling, you're going to use a lighter fly rod.
We did not catch any pike. Supposedly there were pike in this lake, as well as supposedly Arctic char. Now, we learned that maybe they were more on the north end of the lake. No one caught any char. I still would love to get back to Alaska and catch an Arctic char. I've never caught one before. I've never caught a Dolly Varden either. They've got those dollies down by Jason, I believe, down Kenai country. I think I got to get to the North Slope if I want to get serious about Arctic char.
Well, Jason, actually, they get some nice Dolly Varden char down in the Kenai River there. They're really nice fish, beautiful colored fish. They're great. But yeah, if you want to get into the Arctic char, you're going to have to take probably 2 float plane trips. You're going to have to get up there a ways.
And I would point out these grayling that we were fishing, if this road went in, I have no doubt they would be wiped out, because they do migrate up through some of these shallow streams that would be threatened by this ambler road. So this beautiful, pristine fishing that we enjoyed would be shot. This is a hunting and fishing issue. Stop the ambler road. Tim, let's swing back to the end of the show. Lots of headlines we'll talk about. We'll bring it back local.
Sounds good.
That was Tim Lesmeister. Let's grab a break. When we return, I think we'll check in with our buddy Stan Tequila, talk some nature notes, maybe get his take on my Alaska trip too. Don't go away. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
Hey everyone, it's Melissa Bachman from Winchester Deadly Passion, and I'm excited to invite you to my Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. This year, I'm going to be making 10 stops across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota. Join me for a seminar packed with proven deer hunting tactics like rattling, decoying, and even a live Q&A where you can ask anything. Every attendee will be entered to win an incredible prize package worth over $1,000. Visit melissabachman.com for tour dates, locations, and more details.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best Huntin' Buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Rite Ace's patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RiteUSA.com today.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob DeRiesline. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you like the broadcast. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions that way, or visit us out at Game Fair this weekend or State Fair the next couple weekends. Get a free cap if you subscribe at either of those two events. Come out and visit our staff. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Stan Tequila is going to join us. I haven't talked to Stan, I think, since late April, so it's good to catch up with him again. Stan, I hope summer has treated you well.
Yeah. Hi, Rob. Summer's been good. It really has been. A lot of people complaining about the warm weather. I'm one of those people that I will not complain about warm weather, only because I know what's coming. You know, it's going to be cold, and I enjoy the break from the cold.
I have been one of those people complaining about the warm weather. I don't mind normal temperatures, Stan, what I don't like is when every day it's 15 degrees above normal. That's what kind of gets under my skin. And I don't like when the weather guys say, here comes the cool down, and it's still 5 degrees above average. My pet peeve. But I tried
true, though. That really is. And the facts are, though, is that this is going to be our new normal, and this is how it's going to be going moving forward. And we need to be able to adjust. You know, the old adage, either you adapt or you die. And I'm trying to adapt.
Oh, good for you. Well, I tried to adapt last week by going to Alaska, where it's
very nice.
Interior Alaska, north central Alaska, where it was still above normal temperatures up there, but at least above normal in Alaska means 70s or high 60s and not 80s or 90s. I was up on just south of the Brooks Range. I got into Gates of the Arctic National Park. I'd been in southern Alaska a couple times before, but I'd never gotten this far north. We flew into Fairbanks and then took a kind of a small commuter plane to a Coldfoot, which is also known as Coldfoot Camp, kind of a man camp town, a glorified truck stop. And then we grabbed a bush plane and flew 100 miles due west into Gates of the Arctic National Park, an area I'd never seen. Big country, wild country, and this Gates of the Arctic, Stan, I think 7 or 8 times the size of the Boundary Waters. You're talking hardcore wilderness with moose and grizzly bears. We didn't see any bears, fortunately or unfortunately. But we had bear spray with us everywhere we went.
Oh, you'd have to in those situations. People oftentimes ask me, you know, where's your favorite place to be or like that? And honestly, Alaska is it, because it's the real deal. It's the real thing. It's not a park, you know, type of setup. It is the real deal. And there's so much of it. So Alaska is, like, for me, top places I always want to go. And that whole area, that Brooks Range, is if people don't know, of course, Alaska is kind of divided up by their mountain ranges like that. So people refer to those, you know, like south of the Brooks Range, and which sounds like where you were at. And that is some of the best areas all through Alaska.
You know, the thing about Alaska is, you know, when I was a kid, and I bet you were the same way, Stan, you kind of dreamed about what America was like pre-settlement and what it looked like as wild and you know, with all these game species and wildlife species that hadn't been pushed under the yoke of European settlement yet. We get a little taste of that in places like Yellowstone and Glacier, but Alaska is that to the nth degree.
It's about
Alaska hasn't been tamed a lot of it yet.
Right, right. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I still, to this day, think about what it was like pre-settlement time and how it would have been and, you know, distribution of animals and things like that. Because a lot of people have a hard time envisioning how it used to be. You know, even right here in our home state of Minnesota, that, you know, the animals were much different than they are now. There's been a kind of a shift in that. And Alaska is that place where you can see things still intact in most places. There is impact just by everywhere you go. You can see it, but it still has most of its ecosystems are still intact. And that's really important. When you have a functioning ecosystem like that, then you're seeing how it really should be.
And that's why we were up there. We were reviewing this project. They want to do the Ambler Road, 211 miles through a completely, you know, untrammeled area of the state. And I was talking to Les Meister about it earlier. We don't need to get into great detail now, but I'm going to be talking about it a lot in future weeks. That Ambler Road project cannot happen. We got to try to stop that because that is the water contamination, the impacts on habitat and wildlife. It's just unbelievable that something like that is even being considered. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Teresa, I'm chatting with our friend Stan Tequila a little bit about my trip to Alaska. Like I say, Stan, did not see any bears. I wish I would have. Saw a few moose, particularly from the airplane. There's a lot of moose there. And one thing, we were talking to some tribal folks, and they talk about how some of the elders up there, especially as you approach the Brooks Range, don't ever remember seeing moose 75, 80 years ago, that the moose have been kind of moving north. I tend to think that's probably a climate change thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I usually, Denali is really kind of in that central part of Alaska, certainly not in the northern part. And the moose have moved into that area and now are starting to move even further north from there too.
Now, traditionally where I was, and there still are, there's not maybe as many, it's caribou country.
Yep.
And that's part of the reason they want to stop this Ambler Road is because it could potentially impede the caribou migration. One of the last great big game migrations that we have in North America. There's several herds, of course, across the North Run, Barren Ground caribou. They actually call these Grant's caribou, I guess, in Alaska. They look very similar to Barren Ground caribou. But they don't respond real well to human development. And I know there's a lot of pictures of caribou walking under the Alaska pipeline or whatever, but they're a sensitive species to disturbance.
Yeah. People also don't probably realize that Minnesota at one time had woodland caribou.
Yeah.
That was the major species here. And of course, that's long since gone.
In the Northeast, in the border.
In the Northeast. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And they're all gone. So we see those changes and these, if you think it can't change, if you think, because that was the predominant like thinking, oh, there's so much of them it could never possibly change. If you think it can't change, it will. It will change. And as we've seen it time and time again, nature is reactive. It'll change and react to what's around it. And, if you think it's not going to change, it will.
You don't have to go that far north and you don't have to go that far north and you can bump into some woodland caribou occasionally. There's some in the Slate Islands in the northern portion of Lake Superior. Mishikpakotin Island had some 10 years ago. Some wolves got out there and took care of that. I believe a very small herd, Stan, and when I mean small, I mean like a dozen animals wandered into Minnesota in the 1980s, into that extreme northeast portion of Hovland, Grand Marais area. They weren't there very long. But you got to get pretty far north into Canada to see any woodland caribou on the mainland these days. But we're not that far removed from Minnesota being caribou country.
And especially when you consider we used to be in caribou country. And white-tailed deer, of course, are also one of those things that's really southern species that is now in that northeastern portion of the state, which, historically weren't there.
I saw the Alaska pipeline and never seen that before. That's quite a feat of engineering that parallels the Dalton Highway going all the way up. A couple of quick wildlife things, though, Stan. I was fly fishing and I jumped a bald eagle off a branch. It kind of struck me that he seemed more spooky up there than they do down here. I mean, eagles are so used to seeing people that you can get fairly close to eagles here, but this eagle saw me coming and he bolted pretty fast.
The more wild they are, it seems like they are less likely to be, jumpy. Hmm. And the more, if they have contact with people and it's a negative contact with them, then they tend to be more jumpy. So there's a chance maybe this one had some negative reinforcement over the years from people, and so therefore it was taken off. There's always a chance that it was just a something that happened, was leaving anyhow too. I find that that's an interesting thing because people are always trying to predict the behaviors, or they'll see a behavior and then they'll try to interpret it. And you got to be careful too when you do that, especially when you're talking about birds, because oftentimes what you're doing is you're comparing it to your own mammalian, you know, experiences, and then you're trying to transpose that onto these avian experiences. And it's really, there's not a lot of crossover. There's not a lot of kind of commonality between them. So you have to kind of look at them and be sure that it's a, this is something that there's some other possibilities of what could possibly be happening is what you have to think about too. And maybe it was just his time to leave. You never know.
Another thing that I saw, Stan, we were sitting at camp and someone said, hey, there's some loons out there. So I grabbed my binoculars and I'm all excited. I'm thinking Pacific loons or Arctic loons or red-throated loons. I pull my specs up and I'm looking and I'm in the Arctic Circle. And it's a pair of common loons.
Common loons.
I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah, I would be too. Red-throated loons are one of my favorites there. And they tend to go to those small ponds in the, you know, in the tundra like that. So that's one of those ones where I'm always looking forward to it. And it's funny, I was a number of years ago, I was up trying to photograph red-throated loons. On a small, we would call it a pond, you know, here in Minnesota. They would call it a lake, of course. But I was surprised at how jumpy they were. I mean, our common loons are very accommodating and pretty, you know, pretty chill. But those red-throateds there that I was working with were very, we had to be full camo, completely covered, and no movement whatsoever. And in fact, what we had to do in order to be able to set up next to the edge of this lake was three of us would walk in and then, you know, two would stay behind and then one would walk out showing that, oh, well, then now they think that we've all left. We're counting on the fact that loons can't count, you know, and they saw activity going in and then they saw activity going out. And so therefore, and that's the only way we were able to actually get those loons to kind of come back to that side of the lake where we could capture some images of them.
And then lots of bugs up in Alaska, Stan. That's what attracts a lot of wildlife up there, migratory birds anyway, is all that protein flying around. But they can make it challenging to be a camper.
Yes, they can. You have to be prepared for that because it can be horrendous. I mean, not like Minnesota standard. It makes us look like we don't have any bugs at all. There's a lot, because there's so much water there, and that water then allows that reproduction of all those insects, and you get a lot of bugs.
I've encountered worse insects, but it was probably one of the top five worst bug experiences. But that's just part of the experience, I guess. Stan, thanks for spending a segment with me. We'll circle back next week and talk maybe some local nature notes.
Sounds good, Rob. Talk to you then.
That's all. Thanks a lot. That was Stan Tequila. Check out his website, naturesmart.com, if you want to see what he's got cooking. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Great hunting dogs deserve great nutrition. That's why Kinetic Performance Dog Food and Outdoor News have teamed up for the annual Huntin' Buddy Photo Contest. Developed for military and police canines, Kinetic helps fuel the energy, endurance, and recovery of hunting dogs and active companions. Now show us your best hunting buddy for a chance to win a year's supply of Kinetic Performance Dog Food. Enter by August 28th at OutdoorNews.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We're with you here every week. If you like the content of the broadcast, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe. Also, you can visit us out at Game Fair again this weekend or the State Fair the next couple weekends. Lots of opportunities to meet our staff face-to-face and subscribe. I want to talk about something that's brewing right now that we haven't discussed much yet, but the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is pitching a new Leech Lake Fisheries Management Plan. They have a public input process underway on that as we speak. Someone is joining me now to talk about that from the Minnesota DNR. Her name is Erin Hawes. She's the Leech Lake Large Lake Specialist, and she's with us now. Thanks for carving out time to talk about this new management plan, Erin.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Give us the basic breakdown here. It sounds like we last updated this plan in 2021. When would the new plan kick in and become effective?
For sure. So our old plan ran through 2025. And so last year we went through the revision process of sort of reviewing our old plan, getting input from our group through public meetings, looking at the trend data, and revising content to best meet our fishery goals. So we now have a draft written and it's at the public comment stage where anyone who's interested in the management of Leech Lake can view the draft online and provide comment. And so as soon as that plan gets finalized, we would be operating under the new plan because, like I said, the old one expired in 2025.
So do all the large lakes in the state, do all fishing lakes, all stocked managed lakes in Minnesota have some sort of fisheries management plan? How are the large lakes different from, you know, smaller lakes, say less than 1,000 acres?
That's a great question. So the large lakes, they all have management plans or are in the process of like updating their plans. And the large lakes use what's called a fisheries input group. So revising the plan is kind of a lot more intensive. And these fishery input groups, they're made up of different constituents that represent different stakeholder groups, diverse local and statewide interests. And so we meet with those groups frequently, we provide them updates, and together, you know, they sort of advise us on what they want to see with fisheries management in the lake. Large lakes are also unique because they operate under annual sampling. And so like a lot of smaller lakes, they only get surveyed maybe once every 3 or 5 years. Some really small lakes, maybe even 10 years, but large lakes, they have annual sampling. And so we have a really good data set to be able to sort of establish these fishery goals and objectives that are measurable to see if we're meeting those goals.
Let's talk about Leech Lake a little bit. Really important fishery in north central Minnesota. Sometimes maybe gets forgotten about a little bit with Lake of the Woods and Red Lake and Mille Lacs. But I fished Leech Lake several times. It's a magnificent fishery. Tell us a little bit about Leech Lake history and the history of fisheries management there.
Leech Lake is really awesome because it's a super diverse fishery. Kind of historically, our management plan has really focused on walleye and yellow perch because of a lot of the work that we do revolves around trying to understand those populations, because those are the species that most anglers are targeting when they visit Leech Lake. And their populations are super influential on one another. You know, walleyes eat a lot of perch. And so you can't really manage for one without considering the other. But of course, like you said, Leech Lake, it's extremely diverse and it offers angling opportunity for like a ton of different species. Muskies, Leech Lake's super famous for the Leech Lake muskie. It's got this huge size potential. Smallmouth and largemouth bass, fishing opportunity, panfish, interest in winter angling around burbot and like whitefish, cisco, tulipy. So yeah, Leech Lake, it's so diverse in its habitats. It has a lot of deep water bays, a lot of real shallow, more nutrient-rich bays. So it's a really, really cool fishery.
It's the third largest lake in the state, I believe.
It's the third largest lake that's entirely located within Minnesota. Yep.
Known for the, what, the 1950s, the muskie rampage that occurred up there. The Leech Lake strain / Mississippi River strain of muskie that we stock all over the place comes from Leech Lake.
It does. And to kind of touch on that, so like I mentioned, our old plan, it's really walleye and perch focused. And of course, we want to continue that work because those species are so important to the fishery. But in this revision of the plan, we actually added muskie as a primary management species. They weren't really in the older plan. And there's a lot of muskie-focused research going on in Leech Lake. Just like they are difficult to catch, they're really hard for us to sample with our like fisheries gears. But there's some new sort of projects going on that are using some new methods to sort of get at questions we have, like how many adult muskies are actually in the population, what kind of habitat are they using, and those sorts of things. And muskies are a really important statewide resource because, like you mentioned, they are the genetic source for our statewide muskie rearing program.
Yeah, we've done several stories about the ongoing muskie research occurring on Leech Lake right now. We're what? Are we a couple years into that now? I think, or 18 months, something like that. That's also tying in forward-facing sonar. That's another topic we've discussed here a lot on the radio program, and that's an important study that that links that all together. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline chatting with Erin Hawes. She is the Large Lake Specialist for Leech Lake up in north central Minnesota. There is a review of the Leech Lake Management Plan underway. If folks want to comment on this plan, they can do so by Monday, August 24th. So more than a week to go on this if folks want to take some time and review the plan and chime in on it. Before we get to that, some other topics. I've great panfish lake. I have fished panfish on Leech Lake a couple times. When I talk about it, I have some people who get mad about it, Erin, because they like to think it's kind of a best kept secret. But a fantastic ice fishery if you like to get into big bluegills and big crappies.
Yeah, for sure. And again, another revision to this plan is adding a panfish species goal, objectives, and actions. There's a special regulation on panfish and leech that went into effect in 2021. And so we really wanted our management plan to reflect that update and provide some information on kind of how we plan to evaluate that regulation. We just did a panfish survey this spring, which involves like 7 nights of what's called electrofishing, where you put some electric current in the water and sample those fish. And we do that from sundown to sunup. So it's a pretty labor-intensive effort. We only do it once every 4 years, but we're really excited to see sort of the results from that and establishing a long-term data set to look at size structure and growth.
We haven't talked about walleyes, and it really is a fantastic walleye fishing lake. What is the status of walleyes on there? I know you monitor the predator-prey relationship close on that. And is the primary forage yellow perch on Leech Lake?
Yes. So the primary forage is yellow perch. Of course, they're super important for walleye management. And some of the revisions in this plan really focus on updating our objectives and actions to better reflect our walleye and yellow perch management goals. So a big one is to continue to refine our actions to balance predator and forage densities in the lake. And that's something we've done through every revision of the management plan. Forage availability, it's really key to the success of walleye management. And so we want to be sure that our management efforts reflect that. And so we can kind of set ourselves up for success and to have some strong year classes. And we also want to remain really resilient in the face of aquatic invasive species and sort of the ecological changes that come along with that. We've been seeing some impacts, we think, to walleye recruitment in the last couple of years from zebra mussel impacts. And so we're taking a really comprehensive look at sort of how we can, again, set ourselves up for success and manage for growth and survival of walleye.
Cormorants have been a topic up there at Leech on and off over the years. Is there cormorant management going on now? I mean, cormorants eat some walleyes. There was some intensive cormorant culling that went on at one point. Is that part of the management plan?
Yep. So cormorant management, it's still in the plan. And that's something that through the input group process, we've really, it's been a great success. So the management of cormorants falls under jurisdiction of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, a division of resource management on tribal lands and waters. And so a lot of work was done between the early 2000s to up to even 2019, looking at impacts of cormorant predation on yellow perch. And so through that research, they found sort of a sustainable management goal of 500 nesting pairs. And every year, work is done to sort of cull birds until they reach that management goal. So yep, all that could, that's still in the plan from the previous plan.
Okay, Erin, if folks want to read the plan, where can they go? Where can they get more information on this and how can they comment?
We're in the public comment stage, and anyone who's interested in reviewing the plan can go online. If you just Google, you know, Minnesota DNR Leech Lake Management, it should be the first website to pop up, and you can provide comment. There's a questionnaire link online, sort of goes step through step through the plan. So you can do it that way, or you can contact me directly or anyone at the Walker Fisheries office. And so all that contact information is also online on our website. Please give us a call. We all really love talking here. So any way you want to provide comment, we're open to.
Yeah, if you go to mndnr.gov and search Leech Lake Management, that'll take you to the Leech Lake Management webpage. It looks like you can email walker.fisheries@state.mn.us or a call, as you suggested, that fisheries office up there in Walker at 218-552-2330. Again, all that information is at the Leech Lake Management page on the DNR website. Erin, thanks for breaking this all down. Leech Lake's a remarkable fisheries, an important recreational place here for Minnesotans of all walks of life, and this management plan will be important for the next decade. Thanks for breaking it down for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob.
That was Erin Hawes, Large Lake Specialist for Leech Lake out of Walker, Minnesota. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring wetlands for nearly 90 years. From breeding grounds and migration routes to wintering areas across North America, we need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone. DU volunteers are the engine that raises the funds to make conservation happen, selling tickets, securing donations, and finding sponsors. If you've got the passion, we've got a role for you. Visit ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Fall is coming, so waterfowlers, listen up. When birds are cupped over the spread, the last thing you need is a misfire. The Rite Ace's patented Inertia Plus system guarantees full bolt closure every single time. It handles light loads through 3.5-inch magnums with oversized controls for cold weather gloves, and its airy recoil pad reduces felt recoil up to 30%. Get elite performance and a lifetime warranty without the $2,000 price tag. Visit your dealer or RiteUSA.com today.
Hey everyone, it's Melissa Bachman from Winchester Deadly Passion, and I'm excited to invite you to my Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. This year, I'm going to be making 10 stops across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota. Join me for a seminar packed with proven deer hunting tactics like rattling, decoying, and even a live Q&A where you can ask anything. Every attendee will be entered to win an incredible prize package worth over $1,000. Visit melissabachman.com for tour dates, locations, and more details.
A bullseye rash can be the first sign of Lyme disease, but not everyone will develop the rash. If you've been in areas where Lyme disease is common and develop fever, fatigue, facial paralysis, or joint and muscle pain, seek medical care. Reduce your chances of getting Lyme disease by wearing insect repellent, showering soon after coming indoors, and checking for ticks daily. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme. A message from CDC.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Welcome back, folks. Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. Tim Lesmeister here to help me bring it home. If you like the content here, you can read us both in the print version of Outdoor News. Give us a call at 800-535-5191, or you can subscribe at outdoornews.com or visit us out at Game Fair, second weekend of Game Fair going on as we speak. Tim, a number of things happened at last weekend's Game Fair. One, we awarded our Outdoor Leaders Award. The Minnesota chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers got the award this year. They do a lot of work at the state capitol. They do a lot of advocacy for hunters and anglers. They've got a lot of energy. And they've also done a number of volunteer stewardship projects the past few years. And that's why we selected them for our 2026 Outdoor Leaders Award.
Yeah, I think it's a great group. They've developed now into probably one of the organizations that has quite a bit of influence when it comes to legislative topics. And so I think that, you know, that's good. We don't have that as outdoor people. We don't seem to ever really get that organized when it comes to the politics. Our nature is just to be outdoors and forget about that stuff. But now we've got MinFish, we got BHA. And I think it's really nice that you chose this organization because their activity is protecting a lot of what we deem precious. And that's just being able to get into the outdoors and enjoy it to its fullest.
So two other big events at Game Fair. One was last weekend. We had an interview with Amy Klobuchar, Senator Amy Klobuchar. She's the DFL choice for governor of Minnesota. We knew that going into the weekend, even before the primary. So we interviewed her last weekend. This weekend, Saturday the 15th, we're interviewing Lisa Damuth. She is the Republican primary winner for the governor of Minnesota. Congratulations to her. She won the primary on Tuesday night, the 11th. Surprised folks, I think, because Lindell, the pillow guy, was up substantially in the polls, but she won that. She has already agreed. We appreciate her agreeing in advance to coming on out to Game Fair. I believe it's at 11 a.m. Saturday, the 15th. We're going to do the same set of questions with her that we gave Amy Klobuchar. And then we will transcribe that and run it in the print edition this coming week's edition of Outdoor News, just like we did this past week with the Klobuchar interview. Both of these interviews also posted at the Outdoor News YouTube channel. We've been doing a lot more with that YouTube channel. I encourage folks to check that out. We talked briefly here, Tim and I, about the Outdoor Leaders Award. The whole award ceremony from last weekend's Game Fair, when we awarded that to those folks, is at the YouTube channel. We've also got a sounding board. Vivian Husvet went out and interviewed some different folks out at Game Fair and asked their take on the three-duck bag limit. And that is all posted at the YouTube channel. I'm going to have some videos from my trip to Alaska. We've gotten a lot more active with YouTube, so check out that Outdoor News channel. If you want to see the complete Klobuchar interview, it's already posted. Tim, last Saturday, I was still up in Alaska, so I was not able to be there for the Klobuchar interview. Ron Shera took care of that. I wrote up all the questions in advance and gave them to Ron.
By interviewing these candidates, you can hold their feet to the fire when they veer off course. You know, they make statements because they want to get your vote. And then once in office, they might look back and, well, they won't look back. They might forget what they said. And in a case like that, you basically have evidence, let's call it, that you can use against them in the court of public opinion. And basically say, hey, you know, why are you going back on your word? You basically stated this, and now you're doing this. And I think that's one of the most important factors as far as I'm concerned.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister winding down this week's broadcast. Did you read the Klobuchar interview? Tim, anything there jump out at you? There were a couple really key points that I wanted to make sure we got an answer on. One was the legacy amendment. I want to make sure the next governor is an advocate for renewing the legacy amendment. Now, governors don't sign amendments. They don't sign these ballot initiative amendments. But nonetheless, they can still advocate for it. They can be a cheerleader for it. And I believe she said something like, you know, I want my legacy to be legacy, renewing legacy. So that was positive. The other thing is the LaSarge-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, will a governor abide by and encourage their party to abide by what the council recommends so it doesn't turn into a free-for-all with the legislature? And we saw a little bit of that, a little bit of those shenanigans in committee here this past session. And she said, she cited how Mark Dayton, when he was governor, gotten, you know, prevented that from happening and pretty much reiterated that that's something she would do also. Anything that jumped out at you?
There's always one topic that comes up, and I'm always amazed by this. It's the gun control thing. Of course, it has to be tapped into for this particular interview that they did with her. And you're always going to get the same answer. Why even ask the question? Yeah, you know, I think that we have... I'm not going to ever do anything that's going to affect you hunters out there, but I do believe in some common sense approaches like banning assault rifles and banning, you know, extended magazines. I expect that answer. Why even ask the question? I mean, the bottom line is I'd rather get into some meat and not ask questions that I already know the answer to.
Well, Tim, we got to ask that question. You got to ask the Democrat, you know, the gun question. If I didn't, believe me, the social media would blow up. Why would you ask her about guns?
I suppose. You know, but they're always like Democrats, anti-gun, Republicans want to put more guns in your gun case. Sometimes I know a lot of Democrats out there that are pro-gun, and I know some Republicans out there that are, you know, afraid of those, you know, basically those scary semi-automatic rifles. So I don't know. I guess you have to ask the question, but it never ceases to amaze me that I always know the answer before they even ask the question.
You know, Tim, I would point out that what you read in Outdoor News was a transcription of the debate. It wasn't every word. We had to kind of summarize, you know, otherwise it would have eaten up the entire edition of Outdoor News, right? If you have all the small talk and all the ums and ahs. So I would encourage folks to go to the Outdoor News YouTube channel and listen to the complete response on some of these. See if that fills it out or satisfies you or other listeners, you know, a little bit more. We had to try to cut to the meat and potatoes of what she said. And we'll do the same thing with Lisa Daymuth this coming week. We also asked her about the boundary waters. You know, she pointed out that she opposed the Stauber Amendment that eventually passed the House and then the Senate. The question is more, and I don't really think Ron Shera got to it, is will she use any means that the state has to stop the Twin Metals mine? I don't think we necessarily got to that with the question. We will circle back with Lisa Daymuth on that this weekend.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because I really believe that that's an issue that is going to adversely affect a huge part of one of the greatest wilderness areas in the country. So I think that we need to actually have some real answers to that.
There's a lot more to get to, you know, this Conservation Advisory Council that the Duck Summit people, Dennis and Anderson and other folks are pushing. That was one of the questions. There's a lot there. I encourage folks to read it. Unfortunately, we're out of time this week, Tim. We didn't cover a lot of headlines because there's just a lot going on. There was my trip to Alaska as well as the stuff going on at Game Fair. But hey, it's that time of year.
It is that time of year, and this is what I call the transition period. We're going from summer to fall, from fishing to hunting, and it's just really coming on fast this year for me anyway. Things are just happening so quickly, so I really look forward to this. I like this transition period.
All right, we will catch up again next week. Thanks, Tim.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
Tim Lesmeister, thank you to him, all of our other guests. Everybody have a great week out of doors. We'll see you at Game Fair. Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.